sports fans across the entire country for the last month have been asking the same question. And I think, I don't know, but I think we're starting to get an answer. For about the last month, especially like the last two, three weeks of the NCAA tournament on the women's side, we saw the incredible attention that the sport was getting. And there was, it's not just about one person, but the driving force was one person.
Yeah, it has to start with somebody. Somebody has to get the ball rolling.
Yeah, and that was Caitlin Clark. That was Caitlin Clark. And the question that we would ask is we'd come in here and say, hey, it was like 9 million people watched the CU game. And it was like 12 million people, 14 million people, 18 million people watched the Natty. Can this translate to the WNBA? And not in those numbers, but can it? Can she lift an entire sport that is kind of like, you know, and we know Kamaji Granderson, our fantastic team member, he's like a WNBA fan. In general, the masses, WNBA is kind of in the blind spot of our sports. In general, okay? Not trying to offend anyone. I'm saying in general, the numbers bear it out. You look at last year's draft. Less than 600,000 people watched the draft. We got the numbers within the last hour. 2.4 million people watched the WNBA draft last night, Phil. That's five times what they did just last year.
And honestly, those ladies were looking sweet. They you know what I mean? Like it was exactly, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how it was going
to
be.
Know what to expect, why?
Well, it's because I've never seen it. Never even tuned in to a WNBA draft.
Exactly.
But it's the exact same as an NBA draft or the NFL draft.
The Prada was on full display.
Yes.
And they are dressed to the nines.
Dressed to impress.
Gowns and all this different stuff. They look great. I agree with you. They looked great. More people watched that draft than probably the last 8 years combined of the WNBA draft. All right. So you're starting to see it translate to a draft night. Did you see the Indiana Fever? Not sold, but because they were free tickets. 17,000 tickets were claimed to watch the draft from the arena. They had a full arena.
Yeah, that's big time. It's improving so much. And it starts with, like I said, Caitlin Clark. It starts with what she's done for the game. And it can only get better. And this is their time. This is the time for the WNBA. They have to use this Caitlin Clark situation. They have to use it.
Yeah.
And, you know, even the Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, like, whatever you have to do to make things exciting so people are tuning in, okay? And also, you need to hope that Caitlin Clark does a lot of the stuff she did in college.
Yes.
And she does it in the WNBA because it's only going to help you out. It's going to solidify things.
I agree. She's got to continue to play well.
Yeah.
Or this story will lose legs over time. But I think she's going to play well. I think she's going to be great.
Why would she not? You know, until she goes out there and she does it, everything is right there for her.
Yeah. So here are some, and I want to talk about her rookie contract here in just a second, because I know that went full viral last night.
Yeah, it was wild.
But before we get to that, you look at just the early signs that this could translate to the pro level and lift a sport that is very niche right now. So you have 5X the year-over-year of a draft rating. You sold 17,000 tickets that were claimed to sit in the arena just to watch the draft pick.
Yeah.
We have the ticket prices for next year's games when the Indiana comes into town. They're five times the amount when they're not there. And we have, within 2 hours after Caitlin Clark being picked, she broke the Fanatics' top-selling draft pick jersey of any draft night ever. That includes the NFL. The record holder was Trevor Lawrence's draft night. Jaguars fans just sprinted the computer and bought his jersey. More people bought Caitlin Clark's last night.
Mm.
So those are telltale signs. Now tell me what you think about the rookie contract. First year, 76,000. Second year, 78. 2026 goes to 86. And then the last year, in 2027, she'll make about $98,000.
And that's without taxes. Imagine when she gets taxed. In Indiana, you get taxed in Indiana.
Okay. And you know.
Yeah. So it's mind-blowing. It's disrespectful. Okay. Think about what the men are bringing in. Zach, they're bringing in the 12th man on the bench is bringing in $5 million almost, it seems like.
But the NBA is very popular.
And it is. It truly is. But come on. You mean to tell me they can't make $1 million for the best player? like the number one draft pick, he only gets $300,000 pretty much, maybe $400 almost. Like,
I don't know. I don't know what to say.
And especially, like, think about if you were in California.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pick another job up.
That's why they go overseas after the season. That's why they go overseas. They play two seasons. They play here in America, and then they go make just as much, if not more, overseas. But my thing is, and this is like, gosh, I don't want to get women's soccer involved here, but it's like.
Oh, we have this argument with my wife and I always have an argument about the U.S. women's team.
I don't want to get in an argument with you and your wife. I just think this is simply a reflection of the interest in the sport. I do. Unfortunately, it hits my eyes the wrong way. I'm like, what the hell? The number one player in the draft is going to make $76,000? But as I said last week, my friend Kamaje is the only person in my life that I know watches WNBA basketball. So I don't have enough like leg to stand. Like in my mind, should they make more? Yes. But is this collusion against the women?
But look at like what she's done for the game. Look what she's done. All right. She has people looking at her, cheering for her. She's getting paid a lot of money, and she's not in the WNBA. She's probably getting paid significantly less going to the WNBA. And unless she would have just said, you know what, instead of just saying, hey, I'm going to stay and go for another year in college. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing.
And I know there's a thought of like, hey, now she's going to make way less. And by salary, she is. But she'll 10X this through Nike and all this stuff.
But why does she have to do that? Why does she have to do that? That should be money on top of what she's making because she's one of the best to play. And if she can be one of the best to play in the WNBA, she needs to be making like some millions of dollars.
And my guess is she will on her second contract. Because you look at some of the highest paid WNBA players, they make like $400,000, but they're all second contracts.
Yeah.
In fact, the first four picks in the WNBA draft, they all make the same money. They're all slotted. They all make the same. So this is the same as the fourth pick. So, Kamaje, I want to tap you into this conversation because I want to give you a voice here because, like I have said, you are literally the one person in my life. You love women's
sports
or just basketball?
Sports, yeah.
What is your take on the dynamic of this conversation that really was going viral last night online?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. The second contract, she will get significantly more. And here's the truth. I could ask a million people in the world right now, hey, guys, where can you find a WNBA game that's not the playoffs? Everybody knows the playoffs on ESPN.
Yeah.
Outside of the playoffs, where do you find the game? They couldn't tell me. And that's the problem. The marketability, one. And number two, man, you've got to get some ratings to take to these bigger networks to say, hey, this is something we can bring to your network. And until they're able to do that, they'll forever be in this spot. That's why Caitlin Clark has become so important because she can single-handedly take, we'll say, if they average per season 500,000 views, she's single-handedly going to put them at 5 million views just as the base. So you'll be able to take that to a major network. So that's just the truth of the matter. That's why the WNBA has suffered over the years, and that's why Caitlin Clark coming in at this exact moment is super pivotal.
Yes.
Especially as they're getting ready to expand out to more teams.
You know how many people on average attend a WNBA game? Around 6,000.
Mm.
Just looked it up right now, about 6,600. You know how many people attended NBA games this year? Total of 23 million fans.
Yeah.
And a record of almost 900 sellouts.
Yeah. I mean, it's significant. And think about it. Like, they have the NBA. So many people are going to that game in their games that they're able to give them the money that the people are going to watch, right? The people are paying for this. Pretty much the people are paying for the players to be out there on that court because everybody's showing up.
Yeah.
You know, but that's why kind of like the women just got to keep pushing. I mean, I feel like I said, for my wife, it's like for the U.S. women's soccer team, like they're out there all the time nationally just dominating. And you have the U.S. men's soccer team who sucks butt usually.
Yeah.
That's getting paid more than them. And it's like at some point, the women's team is getting and garnering so much more attention, and more people are showing up to their games than the men, and now they're having an issue with it. It's like, why are they getting paid more and they're not winning?
And that is different, but it's in the same category.
It's the same with the women.
Dude, how about this? One-third of the NBA this year, one-third of the NBA's teams sold out every single game. That it speaks for itself. The Denver Nuggets sold out every single game this year.
Yep.
So the Warriors and the Mavs and the Heat and the T-Wolves and the Sixers and the Suns and the Kings start doing that in the WNBA. This is why I don't understand why other women in the sports world are hating on Clark. She's about to raise the tide that's going to lift all the boats.
Or get you paid. Or get
that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying. This is why you need this. You don't hate on Stone Cold Steve Austin becoming popular. You now know when you go to these towns, it's the place is going to be more filled and everyone's going to make more money on the card. Same goes for UFC. When Conor McGregor's on the card and the house does it, like, everyone benefits. So, by the way, WNBA is looking to add 3 more new teams and Denver's on the list.
Mm.
So, just keep that in mind here. All right, time's up, pencils down. Please pass in your NBA MVP votes. What are the early returns looking like for Jokic today? And who are we rooting for tonight? That's next. By the time I grab my books and I give myself a look, I'm at the corner just in time to see the bus fly by. It's all right. Time's up. Pencils down. Please pass forward your NBA MVP votes.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the test. I was like, you know dang well Zach only put his name on that paper.
Oh, dude.
No, nothing else is done but the name.
I said time's up. Pencils down, you start to sweat over there. You're getting flashbacks. You're getting flashbacks. What are the early returns looking like for Jokic MVP voting? The ballots were due yesterday. And then also, what are we rooting for tonight? Talk about MVP first, all right? We're starting to see some of the early returns.
Yeah.
And these are people who have publicized who they voted for after they turned in their ballot. All right? As of 10 o'clock this morning, the first 17 results that we got, 17 different people who voted on the MVP, 14 of them had Nikola Jokic as their first place vote. Nikola Jokic is going to become the 9th player in the history of the NBA to win 3 MVPs, joining the list of Bill Russell, Will Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Moses Malone, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. You now need a 9th finger to count. Pretty darn cool.
No, that really is. Now, I'm kind of upset that you have 17 people voting and only 14, you know, voted for Jokic, who everybody knows is going to win it. But I guess not everybody wants to be on the Jokic train 3 times in a row.
Yeah, and the other guys have a great case. I mean, what Luka Doncic did this year, he's averaging 35 points a game.
I know. But I still wouldn't give Luka it over SGA.
No. So you would have Jokic, SGA, Luka?
Correct. Yeah, that's mine. Okay.
Same. And you know, what I don't like, and we have a tendency to do this in just our culture, in order to build your guy up, you want to push someone else's head down.
Yeah.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had a legendary season for the number one seed. We all agree the Western Conference is a dogfight. They're the number one seed, and he did record scoring this year. So someone like Stephen A. Smith is saying, that's who I'm voting for. And this was Stephen A. Smith from earlier today going back and forth with Broncos legend Shannon Sharp.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should be the NBA MVP. You know, don't give me that look, Shannon. Don't you do it. Okay, don't you dare do that. Excuse me. Before you make sure you contort your face with the stuff like the way you do it, let me tell you something, Shannon. I know how great Jokic.
Yeah.
I get that. I understand that. You know what I'm saying? I see Luka. I see the show that he's putting on, led the league in scoring. Absolutely spectacular. Let me throw these numbers by you, please. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander averaged 30.9 points per game, second in the NBA. Career high 54.4% shooting from the field. 37.6% from 3-point range. Led the league in steals with 2.1 a game. Career high 6.4 assists per game. Okay, this is what we're talking about here. The number one seed in the Western Conference.
Percentage points.
Tell me, the number one seed. okay? Oh, by the way, Shannon, not only the number one seed, but the number one seed with the second youngest team in the NBA.
So a lot of good points there. I mean, Shea's great. Shea's great. So I want to correct my friend Stephen A. Smith on a couple things. SGA, he said he's the second leading scorer in the NBA. He's actually the third.
Okay.
When he says he leads the NBA in steals, he's tied for first with De'Aaron Fox. And you want to know what's funny? Shea Gilgeous, okay, number one in steals. Jokic is tied for seventh. He averages 0.6 less a steals per game than SGA. So that means every other game, SGA ends up with one more steal than Jokic.
And Jokic is a big boy.
Jokic is a big man. He's the only center on the list of steals leaders, but he's still top 10 in steals. He's top 10 in scoring. He's top 5 in rebounding. He's top 5 in assists. And he's top 10 in steals. It's remarkable. So you and I agree. Everyone's not going to agree on this.
Yeah. Like I said, Jokic deserves it this year. But make no mistake about this. If SGA goes off and has another year like he did this year, which he should be if he's going to be a superstar, he definitely should win it next year. Even if Jokic has the year he has this year, next year, and SGA has the year he did this year for next year, SGA has to get it.
He might.
And he's the number one seed, Zach.
Yeah.
And they've dominated the Denver Nuggets now.
Yeah, and if you want to use that as a tiebreaker for your vote for SGA, that's fair.
Yeah,
fair.
But overall, you know, you have to pass the wealth around at some point. I mean, Jokic is going to win three MVPs in a row. Or not in a row, but three MVPs.
Yeah, three out of four. And some say should be four in a row.
Yeah.
Should be four in a row. But I think you're right in that we will see Jokic fatigue this time next year. If the exact two same things happen, you might see SGA win it. These are human beings voting.
Yeah.
When human beings vote, they, you know. But I'll say this, though. If SGA and Jokic switched places, and SGA did exactly what Jokic did, top 10 scorer, top 5 in assists, top 5 in rebounds, top 10 in steals, SGA might be unanimous vote. He might be unanimous if he did the exact same thing Jokic did. But I think Jokic just like, they might not want to vote for him again, you know? So, all right, interesting dynamic there. We're going to continue to count votes, but it's looking like, according to the early results, Jokic is going to gallop across the finish line for his third MVP. This spring, Phil and I are galloping out to the street. We're taking the show on the road. It's the Drive's Brouhaha. Our first stop is in Edgewater at Edgewater Beer Garden. We'll be there this Friday from 2 to 6 p.m. So head to denversports.com/drive for more details. All right, shifting gears. If the Broncos don't love a quarterback in the first round, what does history say about picking 12th overall? And also, news on the Deion Sanders football program in Boulder front. We'll pass that along to you coming up next. All right, got a little bit of news to pass along from up in Boulder. I remember... Well, it wasn't quite this time last year, I guess a little over a year ago, when the one of the highest-rated recruits in the history of Colorado football declared that he was coming to see you. He was coming to see you. It was Cormani McClain.
Yeah.
Five-star blue-chip cornerback who had committed to Miami and then started flirting with Coach Prime to the point where the Miami football staff, collectively, the staff, showed up at his high school to try to re-recruit him to the Hurricanes. He's from the state of Florida. And when they showed up at his high school, he was already in a plane on his way to Boulder. He committed to Boulder, and then it didn't work out. He was not on the field. I remember Prime being asked about it during the year, gave a kind of bristly answer about what was going on with him. And he has decided to leave the program. He is transferring. He was entering the transfer portal and leaving Coach Prime and CU.
I mean, I think all of us seen it coming. With the transfer portal being like this available thing for everybody that doesn't want to be there or gets a little pressure put on them, there's just no... I don't know what this transfer portal is. A good thing, I guess, and it's a bad thing. You can get kids fast. it's a bad thing because you lose these kids fast. And also for these young men, coming up in high school, it's like a lost hope for them. You know, why would I go and get a high school 18-year-old, 19-year-old maybe.
Yeah.
Or I can go get a 20-21-year-old that has played in games, that's really good, they just need a better option or a better opportunity because the person they're playing, behind is better.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of where we're at. This kid was the number one corner in his class in 2023. What's interesting is I thought this kid was going to leave the program during the year, but he stayed. And then the first window opened up, and then he stayed again. So, but he's, for whatever reason, it was this spring portal opening that he hit the bricks. So I'd like to say it's a big loss. It was supposed to be a big loss, but it was supposed to be a big gain.
Yeah.
But if it's not a big gain, it's not really a big loss. The kid really wasn't on the field for CU.
Yeah, yeah. What's your take on it, man? Like, what's your take on this transfer portal stuff?
I just think it depends on the kid and the situation, you know? And, you know, some kids go to a school and realize they really don't like that school. Some kids realize, oh, my gosh, the kid in front of me is a sophomore. Do I want to play behind him for 3 years and wait until I get a chance as a senior? Other kids just don't like adversity, have had nothing but good times, and when bad times start to come, it's not their fault. And you want to hit the reset button. So I think for each kid it's different, but man, it's I don't think it's healthy for the sport because you have more kids in the transfer portal than you have available roster spots.
Yeah,
a lot of these kids, they hit the portal, there's nowhere for them to go. They're not wanted, and they have this in their head that if they hit the portal, oh, I'll get re-recruited again. It's like some of these kids are just left out in the cold.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's frustrating. It's just things have changed. Times have changed. You got to change with the times. I just feel like it's supposed to build character. That's why you go to school, right? You build the character, you compete, and now there's no competing. Like, I don't get what I want, I leave. But then all these kids call themselves dogs, and all these kids watch these highlights, and I try to imitate what they see in these highlights, and it's a bunch, man. It's a bunch of rubbish right now, to be honest with you.
What do you think, because what Deion has done up there is he has almost branded the program,
yeah,
as come and go. The first meeting was, I'm bringing my Louis. You guys get ready to hit the portal. Then all the Louis comes in, and some of the Louis, you check the tag, and it says Steve Madden underneath.
Yeah,
the LV. It's like, oh, this wasn't from the Louis shop. Hey, this entire offensive line, the Louis. You guys are fake Louis.
Yeah.
Can purge that whole room, bring in new Louis. And you said there was a moment before practice this week where it's like, hey, portal's open.
Yep.
There's one thing to lean into it. It's another thing to, like, it's almost become the identity of the program is the transfer portal.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that is the identity of the Colorado Buffaloes program right now is the transfer portal because Coach Prime pretty much made this a thing, made this an entity because he's the one that kind of really, really got it going. Nobody else was kind of, you know, you had people going in and out of it, but come on now. Once Coach Prime started using it and putting it out there and getting people to come here because of it, it just made it a big thing. And I think, like I said, Coach Prime relies on the portal, but everybody else does as well now.
Yeah.
Everybody's relying on this portal. It's business now. It's not about college football. It's all about business because if you don't do well, you're going to be replaced. You're going to be told to go in that portal.
Yeah.
So it's.
But it's one of these things. It's like, is Deion just owning what was already happening anyway?
Could have. Yeah.
Because I'm here
to
tell
you.
It
makes sense.
I was a Division II nobody, and I watched two kids every single year get their scholarship pulled because they weren't good enough at basketball. I became the voice of a Division I program for 6 years.
Yeah.
Every single year. When they leaned in and said, family on three, 1, 2, 3, family. At the end of the year, they'd say, hey, you last two guys, you're no longer part of the family. You're not good enough at basketball.
That's why you don't like the family
thing. I hate it because it's not family. It's not family.
Yeah.
Let alone the pros. Like, that's what the Nuggets say.
Yes, I've heard that.
Family on three. It's like,
but oh, see,
that's great. That's a culture you're building. You're not a family.
But I will say this: when it comes to basketball, they're more of a family than these other sports. Oh, you know?
Yes,
so, like,
yes, yes.
I agree with you. I don't like that family thing, you know, either. I take family very serious. And the thing is, you say your family and the coaches say it with you, but the same ones backstabbing you, the same ones that's talking down about you.
1,000%.
You know?
Yes.
So it's like, it's what you do for me and what you can do for me.
Yes.
And if you can't do that for me, then you're not part of this clan no more. You're not part of this cult or whatever you want to call it.
Dude, these
you're not part of it.
These college coaches and some of these parents who have their kids, and I used to see it in the basketball training world, like you, these coaches look at kids as like, that kid's going to be a hammer for me. That kid's a saw. That kid's a broom. You are tools that this coach will use to win as many games as possible.
Yeah.
It is built on talent. It is not built on love. This is that the whole family thing, that drives me nuts. Real quick. Actually, you know, we'll wait. Because I have, in the last segment, I said the Broncos don't love a quarterback in the first round. What does history say about picking a player at 12? I have a bunch of names I want to bounce off of you here in a couple minutes that I think will resonate with our listeners here. But I have to tell you about the Fan Flyaway presented by Sport Clips. The Fan Flyaway is back. And this time we're sending one lucky listener and a friend to a road game for the Pro Basketball Championship in June. All right, here's what you get. 2 tickets to a massive game, round trip airfare for you and a buddy, all right? 2 nights hotel stay, totally on us, and $500 just because. Head to denversports.com/thefanflyaway to register and claim your special offer from Sport Clips. Those of you who previously entered a Fan Flyaway contest, good news, you're already part of the club and will be entered into this one as well. Once you sign up, you're entered in for all future Flyaway contests. Again, costs absolutely nothing, and the upside is a memory for life. All right, I'll pass along those names that are have been picked 12th overall and see if it's relevant to us here in Denver. But also, how would Broncos country feel if Denver walks away from the first 3 rounds of the draft with what ESPN forecasted yesterday? I'm going to have that conversation with Phil coming up next. Am I wrong? Thinking of the box from where I stay. Am I wrong? How would Broncos country feel if Denver walked away from the first 3 rounds of the draft with what ESPN forecasted yesterday?
Whoa.
All right.
Why you gotta do it to us?
Me?
Why you gotta talk about it?
I mean,
like, we know what we're gonna do. You know what we're gonna do.
No, I don't.
We're gonna go get your precious JJ McCarthy.
Mm-mm.
And make sure he's all sealed, like, sealed, signed, and delivered here. Right? All nice. What's that wrap? What's that nice old wrap they use so people don't break?
Like bubble wrap?
Yeah. We'll put JJ McCarthy in some bubble wrap as they send him here to Denver.
No, that's actually what you have to do with Michael Penix Jr. with his injury history. Your boy.
MPJ? Is that my...
I'm talking about Michael Penix Jr.
MPJ did well this year for the Denver.
MPJ played 81 games.
He did. And guess what?
He only missed one because he forgot his sneakers.
He didn't. Yeah, he wasn't even hurt when he missed it.
Nope.
That's wild.
It is wild, actually.
But it was wild he forgot his sneakers.
That is one of the most... Seriously, like... I say under the radar because we've mentioned it.
Yeah.
But one of the most underrated Denver sports huge stories that just doesn't get talked about anymore. It's the health of Michael Porter Jr. But that's what happens when you just show up every single day.
Yeah.
And if you would have told me MPJ would play 81 games, that's almost like, wow. Good for him, man. And we'll get back to the Nuggets here in a little bit. But Mel Kiper and Field Yates yesterday did a mock draft, all right, and they alternated picks for the first 100 players in the draft.
Yeah.
Mel gets a pick, Field gets a pick, and they're playing off each other and reacting to how, you know, the other one, you know, did, right? So in this scenario, and we had this on the docket to talk about yesterday. We just got caught up with so much other stuff between Avs and Nuggets, and I'm glad we made the decisions we did. But in this scenario, Vikings trade up for J.J. McCarthy. So that's who gets my precious J.J. Okay.
Vikings, okay? Because they got... 2 first-round draft picks.
They do. Cool.
First round, yeah.
Yeah, yep. And that's where J.J. ends up. I think J.J. will be a star in Minnesota. That's my guess. I'm not going to ask you because you hate J.J. McCarthy.
Hey, I don't hate J.J.
You do. Field Yates is on the clock when it's the 12th overall pick. And Bo's there. Michael Penix Jr. is there.
Yeah.
And the Broncos pick Brock Bowers at number 12. They say, quote, to take a quarterback, this is Field Yates talking, to take a quarterback or not, that's a dilemma I'm sure Denver is weighing heavily. Ultimately, it felt a little too soon for me, and Bowers is a special prospect. He would instantly upgrade the entire passing game, no matter who's throwing the ball, end quote. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what the Broncos do in the first round here.
Okay. All right, all right.
Build a roster, kind of, right?
Build a roster.
Need a tight end?
Yeah, we do need a tight end. And that's the recipe for success right now, Zach. If you go around the league, a great quarterback and a great tight end. We're not in a situation right now. We're in no man's land with our pick. Okay? The person that you think and a lot of people think he really wants, he doesn't have enough for. Or he may not be willing to risk everything to get him. So now you have to get the next best option, all right? A talented tight end that if he is one of these generational talents, it's going to pay off later on in his career and with the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, and it could. And you look at the history of players picked at 12th overall. And this is, say, let's call it like recent history because I didn't go back to like the 60s, 70s, 80s. But from like the mid-90s, these are players picked 12th overall. Warren Sapp. Warwick Dunn, Sean Merriman, Haloti Ngata, Marshawn Lynch, Ryan Clady, Knowshon Moreno, Fletcher Cox, Odell Beckham Jr., Vita Vea, Micah Parsons. I mean, those are studs.
Talented. Some are already Hall of Famers.
Yes, some are. No question about it. And maybe Brock Bowers is that for Denver. That we're looking at like years from now, like, wow, those quarterbacks pushed down great football players.
Well, that's the thing, Zach. Like, think about it. People are saying right now, okay, we can have Bo Nix. We can have Michael Penix Jr. And a lot of people are saying that don't think that they're first round talent.
Yeah.
So it's like, are we willing to reach for a quarterback that's not a first round talent just because we have to find a quarterback and Sean may not love him, but we need to get one anyway? Or do we go for something that's going to benefit us and help our football team as well when we finally do get that quarterback that Sean really wants? And it may not be this year, or it may be. Who knows? But if you have someone like Brock Bowers sitting in front of you, you got to take him.
And you want to know what? So just to hit pause on it real quick to that dynamic that you just sort of laid out in that, you're not going to force the issue. You're going to draft an awesome player and figure out the quarterback position later.
Yeah.
Just to hit pause on it, tight end is historically, and I've talked a lot about this through the years, mainly after the Noah Fant draft pick, it is a historically slow starting position.
Yeah.
We went from 1969 until 2 years ago before a tight end rookie had a 1,000-yard season. Until Kyle Pitts did it just a couple years ago in Atlanta, the last 1,000-yard tight end rookie was Mike Ditka. 1,000-yard running backs every single season. 1,000-yard receivers every single season.
Yeah.
Tight ends? No. It's just historically slow starting. Doesn't matter if you're Travis Kelce or George Kittle or Tony Gonzalez or Dallas Clark or fill in the blank. It's just historically slow. But I'm mentioning that because if you don't have the quarterback right now and you drafted a historically slow starting position, he might have a year of maturation and marination, and then when you address the position later, they're more maybe synced up and he's ready to roll for that young quarterback.
No, it's a good thought. Like, why would you give up a situation where you do need a tight end? Tight end position in today's football is so important in the blocking game and in the catching game. They help you get the first downs. That's something we missed last year.
Yeah.
Dulcich was not there.
Nope.
So guess what? It was harder to make plays because you don't have that tight end that's getting you those 5-6, breaks the tackle, gets 7-8 yards, moving the chains, having a dominant blocker. Like, that stuff goes a long way. And if you could have someone like Brock Bowers who's supposedly able to block and run,
yes,
you can't give that up, especially if there's not a quarterback you truly love. And you know you can't get the J.J. McCarthy, the Drake May, the Daniels. You know you can't get them. So why are you going to go and reach for something that you know you can probably get later on or you just don't love just because people want you to?
Well, these are realistic conversations. And this is what happens when you're picking at 12 and not 5 or 4. You are in quarterback no man's land, but you might be in perfect position to draft the next, you know, Hall of Fame tight end.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, no one's going to be, you know, complaining about it. But it still brings up the question, what's the plan at quarterback? And in this exercise between Mel Kiper and Field Yates that came out yesterday, the Rams end up moving up and drafting Michael Penix Jr. with the first pick of the second round. Bo Nix falls all the way to 36th overall, and the New York Giants grab him. Broncos don't have a second round pick.
Nope.
So now you go to the third round, and Field Yates is once again on the clock, and he picks the Denver Broncos with the 76th overall pick, select Spencer Rattler, quarterback, South Carolina.
Ooh, everybody's going to be like, boo! Sean's going to be smiling.
Field Yates says, Denver's patience at quarterback pays off here. Rattler could certainly compete with Jarrett Stidham for the starting job right away. Rattler threw for 3,200 yards last season, and he has had a good pre-draft process, end quote. How would you feel, do this exercise to get to this question, how would you feel if the draft, the first three rounds are over, the top 100 picks come and go.
Yeah.
And we are headed into the 2024 season with a quarterback room of Ben DiNucci, Jarrett Stidham, and Spencer Rattler.
It doesn't sound pretty at all. It sounds nasty. It sounds like we're going nowhere. But this is when you got to have a little bit of trust in what Sean Payton's doing. Because I'm like you, Zach. I'm like, what are you doing? You just gave up a chance to have Michael Penix Jr., if some people want Bo Nix, right? We could have tried to get up to the top, and maybe they do, and they just can't get there. But, like, people are going to be saying Spencer Rattler out of everybody? You know, there's other quarterbacks that are in front of him, but right. We decided to go with Spencer Rattler. This is when you have to kind of go back to the words that Sean said earlier before, was it Combine even started?
No, it was the Super Bowl.
For the Super Bowl, when he was like, hey, some people are going to be good at this, others are not. I'm glad we're going to be good at this.
Yeah.
A lot of confidence, and this is where I said, hey, he must know something we don't. It's easy to say J.J. McCarthy, and then everybody jumps on the train right now, J.J. McCarthy, but why would you go out there and say something like that? And I know that like you're saying this is before J.J. got big.
Right.
But why would you go and say something like that to the media if you didn't have something up your sleeves like a Spencer Rattler where nobody's even thinking of?
Well, that could be the case. And if Sean Payton's plan the whole time from the Super Bowl was to draft Spencer Rattler in the third round, and he turns out to be Russell Wilson in Seattle or Joe Montana, both of those guys, Dak Prescott, they're all selecting the third round, then Sean's a genius, and we should build Sean a statue. But I have to tie half of my brain behind my back to think that the Broncos entered into the offseason and said, you want to know what? We'll go. We like DiNucci. We like Stidham. We're going to not do anything in free agency. We're going to not take a quarterback in the first round, and we're going to wait to the third round. I just don't believe that was the plan. And if it was, bad plan.
Well, and look, Zach, first off, in order to tie your brain behind your back, you have to have a brain.
Oh, okay. Look at you. Look at you.
Second off, I don't think that's their first option, right? Spencer Rattler is not their first option, but it's like having a house. It's like your wife and you guys are driving by, and you know it just like I do, right? Our wives probably like have different tastes than us, and you see that house, and it's like, I really want that house. And you're like, okay, cool. You go there, and that house is $1 million. And it's like, yo, that's way out of our price range. We can't do it. That's exactly the same situation here in no man's land with the number 12 pick, and knowing we don't have draft picks and other players to give away to move up to what we want. And are we willing to give up everything to get this young man that, you know, Sean may love? Is it worth it? That's kind of the things that Sean's probably asking himself. Is it worth it right now, okay, to give everything I got to get up here to get this quarterback, or do I play it cool, play it safe, find somebody that I know I can develop? And maybe comes, you know, something comes about it. If not, I'll have somebody next year. I'll try again next year.
But we'll figure it out next year, dude. Here's the thing. Going off your house analogy, you actually lived in the million-dollar house.
Yeah.
You actually lived there. And Sean said, I can't do this anymore. I got to move on from this million-dollar house.
Because there's ghosts in it.
Get me out of this million-dollar house.
Poltergeist going on. I don't want to get out too.
So Russell Wilson is the old million-dollar house.
14 bathrooms.
You were already paying the mortgage on it. And he's like, this house sucks so bad that I'm willing to pay the mortgage and I'll live somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the plan for the new house is Spencer Rattler and Jared Stidham? That's not a house.
But see, that's the thing though, Zach.
That's not a plan. Jared Stidham and Spencer Rattler is not a plan.
It may not be a plan right now, or it may not look like one because it's not a flashy pick. But like you said before, do you think that people thought that Russell Wilson back in his prime when he got drafted in the third round was a plan?
No, but the thing is, he wasn't the plan. They had just paid Matt Flynn. It was like, oh my gosh, we have to respond to this guy we picked in the third round. We took a flyer on this guy. But the plan was Matt Flynn. Then the plan changed because Russell was so good.
In this case, right now what it's looking like is the plan is Jared Stidham because there's nobody else out there. And so it's like if we go and get a third round quarterback, ends up beating Jared Stidham out, we still look good. And we didn't have to give up a bunch of money because we don't have it right now. We don't have the money to go out there and get the people we want.
Because you're paying the old mortgage.
For sure. So he's probably mad at his wife, which is George. We went out there, you want me to buy this house with poltergeists in there and ghosts, and now we ain't got nowhere to stay. Because I'm not staying there with a boogeyman looking at me.
See, here's what I think happened.